702.
WhatsApp Profilwe.
On 072 702 1702.
And at 10 minutes past nine, we get into it with resident clinical psychologist Kosi Giane, looking at how to recognize and break traumatic bonds or trauma bonds. Kosi, welcome. It's always a pleasure to chat to you on a Sunday. We never shy away from the more difficult conversations, and this is just one of them. As I mentioned, we are having a series of conversations as we build up to 16 days of activism on violence against women and children. And this conversation around traumatic bonds is one of them. Good morning, Kosi.
Oh, good morning, Rafila. Always a pleasure. I wish it wasn't under these circumstances, but that's our reality. And as you say, let's go there. Let's not shy away from this.
So traumatic bonds, Kosi, being emotional bonds with an individual and sometimes with a group that arise from a recurring cyclical pattern of abuse perpetuated by intermittent reinforcement through rewards and then punishment. Yeah. Flesh that out for us, because I'm sure many of us have come across that somewhere in, you know, on social media or on some recess or another of social media, people either using that phrase correctly or incorrectly, trauma bonds or traumatic bonds.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I posted it in my status, the topic for today, and somebody said, oh, is that what it's called? Thank you. I didn't know. I know this is going on in my family, but I didn't know that that's what it's called. And I do want to also say, you know, throw back to last week and say this builds beautifully on where we were, where we started last week in terms of looking at, you know, the bystander effect, the role of other people in an abusive situation. And now we are turning the light, you know, back into the relationship and the people involved in this in terms of looking at, you know, what is the quality of relationship that perpetuates these kinds of dysfunctional relationships. And it's, you know, the essence, it takes us to that phrase, ties that bind, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're saying, as human beings, we are social relational beings. And our need for connection, our need for belonging is natural. It is part of what defines us as human beings. Mm-hmm. When we're talking trauma, it is when those normal, natural desire, the quest, is corrupted by a dysfunctional relationship where we bond, we remain bonded to somebody who violates the fundamental essence of our need for connection and belonging that honors us and honors the person and the relationship that we create together. It flies in the face of all that, and yet we remain bonded to that situation and the person and the relationship.
Mm. Sure. Okay. So, Kosi, and to that person and that relationship, and all of this in the context of, if we are going to talk gender-based violence in the country, then we have to then, you know, interrogate the fact that so much of this violence is intimate partner violence. You know, it's not a stranger who comes in off the street and, you know, terrorizes you or beats you up or whatever, or abuses you. It's someone that you, who supposedly loves you and who you supposedly love as well, right? Something has changed. And so leaving an abusive relationship because, as you say, that need for an emotional attachment has been corrupted, leaving an abusive relationship isn't as simple as walking out the door because of this dynamic. Just explain to us what's happening when we talk about cyclical pattern of abuse. And perhaps, you know, I'm going to use another term, which you're better suited to deploy as a psychologist, which might be love bombing, which we often hear in relation to gaslighting, where the relationship starts and, my goodness, are you treated like a king or a queen for 6 months until everything turns on a dime, and then that treatment, that, you know, that amazing treatment and the love that you're feeling becomes sort of like a reward system, I'm guessing, where if you behave, you get the love. If you don't behave, you're treated atrociously or abused.
So here are two fundamental things to understand. And, you know, we all kind of would say, why don't you leave, right? And here's part of the dilemma of trauma bonding, is that, number one, it's easy to attach someone who treats you well and shows you love and care and support and all of that, right? So, mm-hmm. and that's the fundamental principle behind our need to be loved, our need to belong and connect to a significant other. But secondly, it's easy to leave someone who consistently abuses you.
Mm.
And you are clear in your mind that this person is abusive and evil and so on. This is never going to change. I'm going to walk away from this. Trauma bonding relies on the cycle of ambiguity, of hot and cold, of love and pain and abuse, right? So it starts off, they generally will lay that foundation of, as you say, you are the king or queen. You know, they put you on this pedestal. They give you an experience like no other,
mm-hmm.
which then creates this fantasy that this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. Nothing less will ever do.
Yeah.
And so they put you and prop you up on this pedestal, and then out of the blue begins cycles of situations, episodes that begin to chip away at this block of perfection and fantasy. Yet what it relies on is that it has laid this foundation, which
mm-hmm.
if you don't add things together, connect the dots, hope it keeps you beholden to this foundation, this fantasy, such that even though your daily experience quickly turns into what begins to chip away at that fantasy of perfection, you still hold on to that fantasy of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you remain eternally optimistic,
mm-hmm.
You know, and hopeful in the face of overwhelming evidence to the contrary. You keep hoping against hope. And here's the thing, you know, and this is a sentiment that we talk about in terms of depression, that, for example, all of us know that we will go through adverse situation and some sort of distress. What keeps us going is the hope that this too shall pass.
Mm.
And it is, we get depressed when we have lost hope that this too shall pass. Then we kind of spiral into a darkness. With trauma bonding, we hold on to this hope, even when it actually doesn't make sense. In the face of evidence to the contrary,
mm-hmm.
we keep playing out this fantasy. We keep rehashing this fantasy in such a manner that it overwhelms our ability to look at, face, accept the reality that the opposite is what is obtaining actually in this relationship.
Yeah. So, you know, so of course, as you say, you've laid out the fact that the foundation for the abuse is in fact is the fact that you've been showered with such affection and assurances of love,
yeah.
to begin with, and that it all turns very, very unexpectedly and catches you off guard. Trauma bonding also, you know, it doesn't only take place in a romantic relationship. It could be between that. Between a child and a caregiver or parent, you know, and so many other dynamics, Kosim.
Yes.
So
the essence of it being that mm-hmm. it's that ambiguity, and this is where it then relates very well with what you've mentioned, you know, around gaslighting and love bombing, where it creates dissonance in your mind, where clarity, where a person becomes consistently negative and abusive, it's easy to reckon, to come to terms with that.
Mm-hmm.
It is when there is the turning against yourself, in essence, and this could be done by the person themselves, and this, they usually leverage some sort of power imbalance. So part of what would happen in that fantasy stage of that relationship is that you are manipulated into a form of dependency and power imbalance.
Mm.
Where, for example, the person convinces you that they live and breathe for you, and therefore you owe them the same.
Mm.
And so, then they start to isolate you from other people.
So just to be very clear, Khosi, this is not incidental. It's not something that someone might sort of slip on a banana peel and do to you. It is 100% intentional. They mean to do what they do.
Indeed. And hence we talk about the cycle. Cycles like that are never coincidental. They are deliberate. You know, they are born of a calculated process and a calculated understanding of what strings to pull to render you servant to or subservient to. It becomes an indebtedness to this relationship that makes it incomprehensible for you to leave.
Despite what everyone else on the outside can see.
Indeed.
Quite clearly.
And occupational isolation can be one of those things where a person, you know, assures you of they are there for you. They will take care of your every need. And in fact, you know, you don't even have to work because they've got you. And in fact, that your ability to earn an income, they distort that into, you know, you're going to be out there. There's going to be all these people. There's going to be all these men that's going to make me feel. And it makes me feel inadequate if I can't provide for you. And if you're out there, it makes me feel that I'm not enough. It's socially connected to other people. It tells me that you're saying to me that I'm not good enough for you. And so through that kind of messaging, manipulative messaging, and they will also use accusations of infidelity to prop up that isolation and manipulation. So, for example, if you're at work, I wasn't able to get hold of you. So who are you with? Who are you talking to? If I call you and I can't get hold of you, where were you? Who were you with? And they trap you into this need to constantly prove your loyalty.
Yeah. How do we break these bonds, Khosi?
Of course we can. I think the important thing is to realize just how deep they run.
Okay.
Because in the process of all these manipulative acts, what it does is that it starts chipping off at your self-worth. So then your self-talk begins to echo and mimic their messaging. So that there is no sense of self.
Yes.
Except a sense that the I am for the other person, as opposed to the I am for me, who I am to myself first, before I am this person's. So I come to then know and see myself through this person's eyes. And that erosion of self-worth that says, who would want you? You know, you've been with this person long enough. You know, they guilt trip you in terms of the things they've made, the sacrifices they've made, the things they've done for you, and therefore that you owe them. And they convince you that the grass is not greener out there. And of course, we have a whole social circuitry of social learning that kind of becomes the infrastructure or scaffolding for these kinds of relationships to form.
Expand on that.
So, for example, if you look at social learning in terms of your own family history, where you perhaps have been socialized into this is what happens. Abuse is part of the relationship. And we are told, especially in our culture, you know, there's terms like imbogoto, you know, where you get praised for endurance. And it defines the essence of woman. You are put on this pedestal by your ability to endure. And there's some biblical script that comes into it with sentiments like a wise woman builds her home, a foolish woman destroys, which then places the inordinate responsibility on the woman to hold this thing together. And if it doesn't hold, the fault is yours. So the blame sits on you. And you then feel responsible to do what it takes to collude with the situation. And so left in your own private world, the perhaps is still a sense that you don't want to be there, but you feel you have to be there. Mm. And you then start to create a narrative within yourself that justifies this or makes this okay, right? You begin making excuses for the person. You collude with them by lying and keeping this a secret. You magnify their positives to overshadow the negatives. And eventually, familiar pain becomes better than the unknown. If I leave, what's going to happen? Who's going to want me? Where am I going to go? Where is there a guarantee that things will get better? And so we kind of get into this catastrophic thinking that says, for example, all men are dogs. Better the one you know than the one you don't know.
Mm.
So these are all ways in which we rationalize and compensate for what is clearly a dysfunctional relationship. Mm. And the important question, of course, is how do we break this?
How do we get out of this holding pattern?
Yeah. Well, the first ally of ever changing anything is that you can't change what you don't see.
Okay.
And hence the relationship, the work on me first, work on me second, and work on me some more. Because you have to accept what is my role and contribution to this relationship. I'm not just a helpless victim. And by that, I'm not in any way justifying or in any way excusing that person's behavior. However, there has to be something that I have communicated to myself, my self-talk, and to this person that they can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And get away with it. And so one of the things that we need to do is to look at how, for example, our own family and social history predisposes us to repeating this cycle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if I come from a family where this has happened, chances are when it does happen, I'm going to draw on that to make it okay, to understand it.
Sure.
So we need to recognize that. And secondly, it becomes important to keep record of things, of incidents, so that you don't see these episodes in isolation, but see them, see the cycle, see the pattern, and hopefully you're able to then connect the dots and come to an understanding that says, this is my reality. Because until you come to terms with that as your reality, you are not able to move and say, what is it that I can do to move me away from what from this that I don't want towards what I really want.
Yeah. And part of that keeping of a journal course here is because you're so fragmented, as you say, and you've been chipped, your personality, your sense of self has been chipped away at, that you're not able to see things in their totality, right?
Indeed, that confusion, that contradiction, that you don't know how to make sense of. And of course, if they isolate you occupationally and socially, there is no other voice from whom to hear.
Yes.
They become the only voice.
Yeah.
And so what you do through entrainment, you just echo them. But what you then need, in addition to keeping that, is to a reality check. Mm-hmm. And by a reality check is to have someone who will challenge and not reinforce you. Hi, Chomi, it's okay. Men are like that. Limna, it's the same. So we'll just support each other. That's not useful.
Yes.
Because you have accomplices and not friends who will help you out of that. But you have people that become a comfort to each other so that you are able to justify why you need to stay.
Mm. The recommendation course is that once you've been able to do all of that and galvanize the courage or, you know, the wherewithal to leave, you need to cut off contact completely.
Yeah. And cutting off contact is predicated on your ability to have perspective about responsibility and culpability.
Okay.
Be clear about what's yours and hold the person accountable for their own behavior, because this depends on them saying, you see what you made me do, mm-hmm. and you then internalize the blame. And the person, you know, becomes the saint, you are the sinner that needs redemption and they become your redeemer through their behaviors.
Sure.
It is about being clear that a person is responsible for their behavior in the same way that you are also responsible for your own behavior. So stop rescuing the person and allow the person to take responsibility for their own behaviors. And only then can you then cut off contact. But I mean, you know, we're saying this like it's an easy thing. It isn't necessarily. It's complex. And that is why you may need a part of your reality check, maybe a professional reality check.
Yes. And when you say professional reality check, that is checking in with a psychologist, psychiatrist, someone who can lead you through the process.
It's your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And say they are jealous and so on. There's a whole lot of subjectivities. Whereas perhaps somebody external who has no vested interest, maybe a more sobering voice that creates that dissonance that you need to shift.
Yes.
And move forward.
We're going to leave it right there, Khosi, but thank you so much for your time as usual. And we'll continue our conversation next Sunday, where we explore various facets of how and why people find themselves and women find themselves and children find themselves in these cycles, unfortunate cycles of abuse.